the future of the Arctic, and what it might mean for Maine. Last month, Senator Angus King teamed up with Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska to create a new group in Congress, the Arctic Caucus. King believes the Arctic will be of increasing strategic importance as the ice there recedes because of climate change. It's widely believed that new major shipping lanes will open up in the Arctic for at least part of the year, that the area will see more oil exploration and tourism, and that an already fragile environment could be at even greater risk. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll hear from Senator King, as well as several other people deeply involved in the Arctic and its future, and we'll learn what all the changes could mean for Maine. Maine Calling heads north to explore the Northwest Passage and beyond. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The Arctic Circle, approximately 1,500 miles north of Maine, may seem an odd place for Maine officials to focus on, but because of the impact of climate change, the Arctic Sea is changing. And one of those changes includes greater access for ships to possibly travel from Maine north to the Arctic Sea and then west to ports in Alaska and beyond. A Northwest Passage. Today, we're going to learn more about the Arctic and Maine's interests there. In the studio with me, Patty Matry. She is a senior research scientist at the Bigelow Laboratory for Ocean Sciences. Dana Eidsness is director of the Maine North Atlantic Development Office. Patrick Arnold is director of operations and business development for the Maine Port Authority. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about how a changing Arctic might affect Maine? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, that's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Before we get to the guests here in the studio, though, we have Senator Angus King on the line with us. Senator King, thanks for joining us.
Hey, how are you, Jennifer?
I'm great. You're missing the snow by being in Washington.
Well, I've seen plenty of snow this winter, if it's all the same to you. We've certainly had it, haven't we?
That's true. Senator King, you have recently formed the Arctic Caucus in Congress, which, by the way, is hard to say. Why do you believe the Arctic will become so important strategically? Is it because of the possibility of shipping lanes in the Northwest Passage, or is it more than that?
Well, it's a whole combination of things. I think as far as Maine is concerned, the most immediate impact and opportunity is shipping, as you mentioned. The people you have on there, Patrick and Dana and the others, can give you the exact figures. But to get to the east coast of the United States from Asia, for example, going through the north rather than through the Panama Canal and up is a huge savings in time. And therefore money. So it presents a great opportunity for the Maine ports, and we're already seeing part of that opportunity with Aimskip in Portland, which has sort of reoriented us toward the high north. But so part of it is shipping, for sure, and that's going to take time, probably a decade or more, assuming the ice out continues at the rate that it's going. But then there are energy concerns, energy opportunities up there. There are possibilities of conflict, which we have to pay attention to. The two largest Arctic nations are Canada and Russia, and Russia's very active up there. They just did some military exercises a couple of weeks ago. And then the opening up, Jennifer, it's as if the Mediterranean Sea had just been discovered. I mean, think of that. It's a huge body of water that has all the potential and opportunity, but also potential for conflict, and that's what we have to worry about.
Senator King, this month the U.S. is assuming the chairmanship of the Arctic Council, which is an international intergovernmental agency. What should our priorities be as chairman of the Arctic Council?
Well, I think part of it has to be to continue the development of what I call the political infrastructure. That is, the relationships among the Arctic nations so that we can resolve issues without conflict and peacefully determine where the boundaries are, where the lines are. One thing, Jennifer, that's a problem is that we're not a member of the Law of the Sea Treaty, which is a big disadvantage for us up there because we're not able to participate in the process of establishing those boundaries. So that's something I think we should do. But I think developing the political infrastructure, and then aside from the Arctic Council, we need to develop our physical infrastructure. We have one heavy icebreaker and one medium icebreaker, period. That's it. I think the Russians have something like 17. And if you think about it, an icebreaker in an icebound situation is like a highway. It's what builds the highway. And we don't have the physical infrastructure to do that. And that's something that this country has to pay some attention to. But the Arctic Council leadership is a big deal, and it gives us an opportunity to help form the agenda for Arctic exploration and utilization.
And finally, Senator King, are you concerned about the potential environmental impact of further exploration and shipping in the Arctic?
Absolutely, and that's what I mean about the political infrastructure. We have to think about, are there special risks, whether it's shipping. I just was working on something a few weeks ago on black carbon and what soot would do to accelerate the loss of ice. Also, it's the harshest climate on Earth, with the possible exception of Antarctica, and things like drilling and energy exploration are doubly risky and therefore have to be undertaken with great care. And again, that's why this international piece is so important, because we can have all the rules in the world, but if the Russians don't pay any attention to them, or if the Canadians have different standards, the pollution isn't going to know no borders. So again, that's one of the reasons I think the key agenda is to see that this opportunity is opened up in a non-conflict way. I'm going up there in 2 weeks with Lisa Murkowski. You probably heard the funny story. When all this started, I was walking behind her into the Senate chamber, and I said, "Hey, Lisa, I'd like to be the chair of I'd like to be the Arctic senator." And she said, "No, you can be the assistant Arctic senator," being very clear who was in the lead on this. But she and I are going with Secretary Kerry to a conference in 2 weekends, on I think the 24th of April, in the Arctic region up in northern Canada. And I think it's something that it could have substantial benefits for Maine. I mean, one of the things we have is our ports, and therefore I want to pay attention to it.
Well, Senator Angus King, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Senator King is a founding leader of the Arctic Caucus in Congress. Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer. And you've got a great group of guests there. You'll get much more information from them than you do from me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer.
And Bye-bye. We will turn to those guests. Patrick Arnold, as far as shipping in the Arctic, what kind of shipping traffic is there now, and what's expected in the near future? And when I say near future, how near?
Sure. So presently, the majority of the shipping going over the Arctic is very much seasonal, limited to maybe a two-month period in a late summer, early fall time frame. And it's mostly bulk shipping. And bulk shipping would be either energy-focused, such as heavy petroleum, tankers or things of that nature, or bulk shipments of iron ore or other such commodities. Over the last 2 years, we did have our first container shipments. And why that's a big deal is that most of the world's retail goods and the goods that we all have come to consume travel in containers. And so container shipments coming through the Arctic, if that can get to the United States East Coast or to Europe from China and those countries over the Arctic, it's a reduction in 30% to 40%. Of the transit time that it would otherwise take for those ships to arrive at market. But that's just beginning. So in terms of the time frame, Senator King mentioned about a decade, and that's probably the best time frame anyone has put on the table. Our collaboration with the Icelandic steamship company Eimskip, they're very close to this, and they had said, yeah, you know, in terms of a real consistency of access through the Arctic, it'll probably be 10 years.
Okay. Dana, you, the Maine International Trade Center, just created your office, the Maine North Atlantic Development Office, recently. Its purpose is to develop relationships and opportunities. What kind of relationships and opportunities do you believe there will be because of the changing Arctic?
Well, we're working to develop additional trade and investment between Maine and the North Atlantic region. So, you know, looking at Northern Europe, Eastern Canada, Greenland and Iceland, also looking to develop partnerships in that region. We're engaging Maine in conversations regarding the future of the Arctic. Maine has been very welcome in these conversations, and in my work with the Maine North Atlantic Development Office, which we call MANADO. MANADO has been invited to participate in an Arctic Council working group called the Protection of the Arctic Marine Environment Working Group. And that's a group that looks at shipping issues. It looks at ecosystem issues in the Arctic. And also, my office works on developing arts, cultural, and educational exchanges within the North Atlantic region. So, I mean, it's a comprehensive approach, and I think it allows Maine to focus on its strengths. We're well positioned as a logistical partner, a supply chain partner in the Arctic, an economic development partner. And we've got climate science, advanced materials, environmental engineering, and innovation to bring to the table. So moving forward, some of the opportunities that my office will be working to develop are through a partnership with the Maine Ocean and Wind Industry Initiative and the Maine Composites Alliance. We've come together to put together organized participation in trade shows for Maine businesses in the Arctic and North Atlantic region, and we're working together towards doing some network building around infrastructure projects in the Arctic. Right now, in eastern Canada alone, there's an opportunity to connect Maine businesses with about $40 billion in marine infrastructure, mining, and energy projects just in eastern Canada. In Greenland, we're working to connect businesses with infrastructure project opportunities and are also offering assistance there to work as economic development partners. You know, at some point, we may be able to be supply chain partners to supply the Thule Air Base in Greenland. These are all things that we can do from Maine now. You know, with Eimskip's investment in Maine, this has really connected us to these trade routes and has made an Arctic connection possible for the state.
Okay, and maybe for folks who don't drive by the Portland waterfront daily, Eimskip is the container ship that you see at the port, and it's spelled E-I-M-S-K-I-P. Patty Matry, you've traveled to the Arctic repeatedly since the early 1990s. What kind of changes have you seen in those two, almost three decades?
So I started going to the Arctic in the late 80s, and I have been fortunate enough to do many cruises in the marginalized zone, the seasonalized zone, and then a couple times to the North Pole. If I don't go every year, then somebody in my team is deploying instrumentation every year. And the major changes that we see is in the extent and thickness of the sea ice in summertime. Okay, we must remember that it is still cold and dark there, and that there is ice in almost three of the seasons of the year. The major changes are happening in summer. The sea ice is thinner. The sea ice covers less of the Arctic. There's a lot of variability around that. And the ice is more ponded. And even when it comes to shipping, I was thinking that when it seems as per the satellites that it is open water, in reality, is there's this mush there. Or when we think that the ice is solid and you go with the icebreaker to tie to it to sample, what you have is a mush, is what we call rotten ice.
Hmm.
Another change is the increasing in air temperature. That's year-round. But the most important is when the increase in air temperature happens in the wintertime, because that has an effect that lasts far longer. In the summer, we expect it because the sun is out and it is 24 hours daylight. But when the change, the increasing change happens in the winter, that's also there. And that has brought up a change in cloudiness. And that we know a lot less about. Is it really getting cloudier or foggier or not? And it has all kinds of implications, both from an environmental, from the marine food chain, which is something that I work on, to the shipping component. You know, if it's foggier, those captains are not happy campers.
I want to ask you, Patty, about why the Arctic is so important to the rest of the world ecologically, but I have to take a break. And also, when we get back from our break, we're going to talk to Captain Ralph Punt at the Maine Maritime Academy. So please stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Northeast Delta Dental, administering dental benefits for businesses of all size in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Details online at nedelta.com. The law offices of Joe Bornstein, over 65 professionals representing injured and disabled Mainers statewide, joebornstein.com, and Sweetser, offering mental health first aid classes in several Maine locations. Course description and class schedule at sweetser.org.
When composer Philip Glass first started performing his music, it was so different and new that sometimes audiences would get angry. So angry, they'd throw things.
If they threw apples and oranges, that wasn't so great. If they threw an egg, it isn't so bad, because the eggs would just break. No, that could be...
He's our guest on the next Fresh Air. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. In late April, 40 years after the United States left the war in Vietnam, MPBN Television will air several special programs reflecting back on those times. As a lead-up to these broadcasts, MPBN and the Maine Humanities Council are partnering on a series of public advance screenings of the most notable production, American Experience: The Last Days in Vietnam. Each screening will be followed by a moderated discussion of the documentary. Tickets are free to the public, but quantities are limited at each designated venue and must be reserved ahead of time. At this point, we have screenings scheduled in Ellsworth this week and Orono, Halton, and Lewiston. Information about the film, The Last Days of Vietnam, and the free public screenings is at mpbn.net. Just click on Events.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, A Changing Arctic and What It Means for Maine. With me in our studio, Dana Eidsness. She is director of the Maine North Atlantic Development Office. Patrick Arnold is director of operations and business development for the Maine Port Authority. Patty Matry is a senior research scientist at the Bigelow Laboratory for Ocean Sciences. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now is Ralph Punt, Captain Ralph Punt. He is a professor at Maine Maritime Academy. Captain Punt, welcome to Maine Calling.
Why, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I understand Maine Maritime Academy was recently awarded a significant grant related to navigation in the Arctic and to developing coursework related to navigation in the Arctic, and you are developing that coursework. Can you tell me about it? What are you thinking about as you put together this course?
Well, it's kind of interesting how that all came about. I've had the opportunity to sail commercially both in the Arctic and the Antarctic. And I was introduced to the IMO, the International Maritime Organization, and I was part of the subcommittee as to develop the training curricula for the IMO, because that is going to be a required training under the international mandates for vessels that go up into the Arctic as of January 2017. So there's quite a rush to get the mariner prepared for the opportunities. So it's going to be my job to make sure that we mitigate any kind of problems that the mariner may have simply by ignorance of the environment in which he's going to be traveling.
What kind of challenges do you foresee that are not typical in other shipping?
ice. Ice is about probably the mandated. What bothered me when I used to travel up there, I made the Thule run a number of times and also the McMurdo run down in the Antarctic. And the difference between the Antarctic and the Arctic, to me, I would far prefer to go down south than I would to go up north. And it was simply because ships and ice and fog simply are not a good combination. And the technology that was available to me at the late 90s and early turn of the century here, of the decade, I mean, excuse me, I'm not that old, has increased considerably. We have a lot more technology that, boy, I would have loved to have had. But to simply be on a ship working your way through an ice field with a basic radar component and bare minimum information is difficult. So things are getting better, but there's a heck of a lot more to do as far as mariners are concerned.
And finally, Professor Punn, I have to ask you, what do you foresee for navigation in the Arctic? Do you believe that it will be much more significant in 10 years than it is today?
Well, today it's very minimal. We're just getting started, and the expectation from industry is yes. And I'm interested to hear that from the science community too, that they're looking at it as a 10-year out type of scenario, because that actually gives us a heck of a lot more time to put the resources in we need to safely navigate the area.
All right. Well, Captain Ralph Punt, a professor at Maine Maritime Academy and the man developing the new Arctic navigation coursework at Maine Maritime, thank you so much for calling in today.
My pleasure.
Patty, before the break, we were talking about the Arctic and its importance to the rest of the world. Could you, in layman's terms, explain why we all should care what's happening in the Arctic?
We should all care, but especially in Maine, we also have to care. And there are probably two major components. One is weather. We all see that winters and summers are changing. And whether it is a cooler than normal winter in the Northeast when the rest of the country had a warmer than normal winter, such that California is in drought and the Southwest is in drought, we may not think about it here in Maine. But the interface between the air masses, the jet stream that come from the Arctic and what's coming from tropical regions, that's a difficult, difficult question right now. And the other one are changes in circulation. So the Arctic is melting, the sea ice is melting, the land is also warming up. There is a lot more fresh water on the Arctic right now. There's a very large length of fresh water. That water is making it through the Canadian Arctic, through the Labrador Sea and around. And those fresher waters do make it into the Gulf of Maine locally. How much? We don't know. We know that the Gulf of Maine is already fresher than 10 years ago.
So it affects the whole ecosystem, the whole marine ecosystem. Absolutely. Everybody in this room is nodding. Earlier in the conversation, Patrick, you mentioned that what is going on now, the little bit of shipping that goes on in the Arctic is bulk goods, including oil. And then we hear from you and from Captain Punt how dangerous it is to navigate in the Arctic. Is there a real concern of oil spills damaging this already fragile and changing ecosystem? Patty, you're nodding.
So, absolutely. I think that's where the United States' involvement on the Arctic Council with the chairmanship now comes into play, because we have an opportunity with the United States now taking over the chairmanship of the Arctic Council for the next 2 years to step up and take some leadership in this discussion. Because the reality is, regardless of what we publicly or privately want to have happen in the Arctic, change is happening, both climate change, utilization of resources. It's happening and it will happen. And so we need to figure out how to ensure that change is as safe as can be while understanding those changes and mitigating the human contribution that is, impacting that climate change. But things like navigation and those ice flows, absolutely. We want to make sure that is as safe as possible, and that's where the icebreakers come into play, Right now, with Russia having all of those icebreakers, that's part of what ensures safe transit, safe passage, and would mitigate from a potential, you know, oil spill from a bulk vessel such as that. So there's all these implications, but that's why I think this is a conversation to be broadened to everybody.
Patty.
So right now, for example, I have funding from the International Council of Oil and Gas Producers specifically to look at the interaction between oil and sea ice. In our case, it is between oil and sea ice microbes. And so I have someone leaving, a colleague leaving on Saturday to go to Svalbard, and I will be spending a large part of May working on this, because oil and sea ice are not two very good friends. And indeed, the oil and gas producers have discovered that doing it, exploring there, is difficult, hence why Shell had to withdraw all of their teams a year or two ago on the western side of the Arctic. But the other point I want to make is that there are people who live in the Arctic, who have lived in the Arctic for thousands of years. And their systems, communities, health, and transportation also need to be taken into account. Indeed, there is a meeting happening, a workshop happening at Boden right now, where the agreement with NOAA, I don't remember exactly the name and the details, between NOAA and some of the communities was laid out a few years ago.
And we should mention that the people of the northern Arctic, I'm probably pronouncing this wrong, the Yupik in Inupiat, seven members of those groups are in Maine right now, and there is a public presentation tonight at Boden. There's information on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page, but 7 o'clock at Moulton Union in the Maine Lodge. If you would like to talk with some of those who are living in the Arctic right now and experiencing that change, there's an event at Boden tonight. I'm going to go to the phones now. And Martin, I know you've been waiting a long time. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to talk. Real good conversation so far. And definitely encourage people to come down to Boden College tonight. This is the second time we've been here with the native leadership from the marine mammal groups in Alaska. We've been here hosted by the Arctic Studies Center. I'll give you a little bit of background. In around 2006 or 2007, there was increased concern by hunters about the impact of climate change and certainly the loss of sea ice and how that was affecting their ability to accomplish their food security. And then with the increases in things like offshore oil and gas development or shipping, they wanted to see effective solutions made so that, you know, food security could go on, but also economic development for their communities, which is so important, could continue to flourish. And then with things like oil and gas, they came up with a conflict avoidance agreement where agencies, the oil and gas industry, and Alaska Natives get together each year and work out how to work all together in the same waterways and do that without conflicting with each other. And that's been a very successful way of doing things. And so more recently, they moved into doing the same thing with shipping. And so I've been working with the group for about 4 or 5 years now, where the marine mammal groups came together. It's the people who are here at Boden College for this meeting this evening as the Arctic Marine Mammal Coalition. And they worked closely with U.S. Coast Guard to see what they could do to make the waterways safer for them when they're out on the water. And also to make sure the marine mammals are not being impacted. And so, you know, even simple things like having the Coast Guard and NOAA annotate the chart, letting the mariners know that there's marine mammals and subsistence hunters on the water at certain times of the year, or putting that on the coast pilots. And ultimately, and more recently, has come together as something called the Arctic Waterway Safety Committee. There's a bunch of these in the country, over 100. They're also known as harbor safety committees, where the existing users of the waterway come together and decide what are the best practices. And this is something that's really exciting for us in Alaska, where we have a lot of people, both the indigenous hunters and a lot of the industry that's been up there for many years and worked out how to do it safely. And really, the big concern is with the new operators coming into the area, you know, people from Korea or India, that don't have the experience with the Arctic. And what these guys are doing with this Waterway Safety Committee is laying down the best practices that all people will be doing in the Arctic.
Well, Martin, thank you so much for calling in. And again, the event at Bowdoin College tonight is at 7 o'clock at Moulton Union in the Main Lodge. Thank you, Martin, for calling in from Bowdoin. All of you were nodding about the concern that, you know, we've had the same nations looking at this. We've had Canada and Russia and the U.S., but he's mentioning Korea and India. The whole world will want to use these passages if indeed they open up. Yes, Patrick?
Absolutely. And that's that's part of why leadership at this time is so critical, because this change is happening. It's happening now, and it's going to mean something to the entire world. And the United States has always, you know, held this position of leadership. Maine happens to be in a very unique position where we can help lead that discussion in a very Maine-like way, where we do care about the environment and we do care about taking care of our resources. And we also understand that you have to, you know, link these Native folks to trade and to opportunities. This is something to be taken seriously. We have an opportunity to lead in that.
Dana, I see you nodding over there. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that this organization, the Arctic Council, can make recommendations but does not make law. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's the Arctic Council. It's a high-level intergovernmental forum. And it provides a means for promoting cooperation and coordination and interaction among the Arctic states. They also invite observer states now, so you'll hear that Singapore is coming to the table and China, and they're included in these conversations. And it really is to make recommendations about shipping traffic, about environmental concerns and whatnot in the Arctic.
So is there no agency that's able to enforce? You know, let's say there's a bad apple who goes against what the recommendations are, who ships, you know, the wrong kind of, you know, ships oil in a time that might be dangerous to do so, or does exploration in an area that has been deemed off limits. Is there an enforceable way to?
No. Not presently.
No. I mean, but it's no different than any other part of the ocean.
Right.
So you have, you know, the EEZ or economic zone, which is so many miles out. And one of the discussions, and Senator King mentioned UNCLOS, which is the law of the sea. There's been an enormous amount of mapping because there are very well pre-established criteria as to where it is. Once you bring all of those of the five nations that surround the Arctic, of course, they all overlap in the middle. And so whose is it? No different than what happens with the extended 200 nautical miles that happens over there. So there are the five countries that surround the Arctic. Then the Arctic Council has two more, Iceland and Finland, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe even Sweden is also involved, Sweden. Even though they're not. They don't border the Arctic. They have permanent observers in the people of the Arctic. And now there are many others who want to come in. And the same thing you see in research. While the icebreakers, indeed, the U.S. has one icebreaker dedicated to research and an ice-enforced vessel, brand new, hasn't even made it to the Arctic yet. The Canadian Coast Guards have many icebreakers, and we all benefit. I do half of my research on Canadian icebreakers and the other one on Swedish icebreakers. And so the National Science Foundation is extending international partnerships to do these things.
Believe it or not, we have to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions about the Arctic. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Ride Aroostook, July 11th and 12th, benefiting Camp Adventure, a summer camp for children with type 1 diabetes. Learn more at ridearoostook.org. The Jackson Laboratory, nonprofit genetics research in Bar Harbor, discovering precise genomic solutions to disease, JAX.org, and Revision Energy, celebrating spring by helping Mainers generate clean, renewable solar electricity. More at revisionenergy.com.
This week on Morning Edition, you heard President Obama make his case for an Iranian nuclear deal.
This is an important first step that we've taken. We have a political framework and an understanding. but the devil's in the details.
Every morning, we talk with people who help you put the news in context. Listen to the next morning edition from NPR News.
And you can join us for that next morning edition tomorrow morning, getting underway at 6 a.m.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, The Changing Arctic. With me in our studio, Patrick Arnold. He is Director of Operations and Business Development for the Maine Port Authority. Dana Eidsness is Director of the Maine North Atlantic Development Office. Patty Matry is a Senior Research Scientist at the Bigelow Lab for Ocean Sciences. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to John in Biddeford. Hi, John. Go ahead.
I have a question. The Arctic ice, as it melts, is it the case that there are greenhouse gases, and as they melt, they would be entering into the atmosphere. And I believe there was an article in Nature recently by a bunch of scientists who said that that is the case, and that will cause a real problem. And I wonder if there's any way to address that.
Patty, this is part of your research, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. This is what I do. So there are two things. If the Arctic melts, I mean, if the sea ice melts, for the longest time, it's been thought as a cap. We now know that it's really, even in the wintertime when it's solid, it's more like a colander, such that there is CO2, carbon dioxide, that can be exchanged with the atmosphere, and the other way around as well. Because the Arctic is cold, just like when you have a Coke, if it's cold, the bubbles stay in it. If it's warm, then it goes flat a lot faster. The same way the Arctic retains gases in it. And hence, it leads, for example, to the early detection of ocean acidification. But the other part is methane. And that's the article that the gentleman is referring to in Nature. It's a review about the release of methane from the Arctic, both land, permafrost, which is melting, but a lot of it is also in the subsea floor along the coast. And there's a lot of work trying to determine how much of that will come out. The numbers seem to be going down, but they're still very, very high.
Thank you, John, for your question. Jay posts on the Maine Calling Facebook page, because there will be a Northwest Passage, doesn't Maine stand to benefit both commercially and from investments in military security? Is this the kind of thing that we're looking at, Dana or Patrick?
So... The early term, the 10-year focus that we're talking about is really the Northern Sea Route. It's not the Northwest Passage. The Northern Sea Route runs along the northern coasts of Russia and comes down and opens up around Iceland. The Northwest Passage is along the top of Canada. So just to clear that up a little bit, in terms of the where Maine would benefit, it could be directly, could be indirectly. So our trade partnership and collaboration with the Icelandic steamship company Eimskip has opened up a great deal of immediate opportunities where we're trading with Arctic nations and locations north of the Arctic Circle, such as Sortland, which is by Tromsø in northern Norway, or even Murmansk in Russia, or Greenland for that matter. And so there are trade flows immediately that we're benefiting from. From the standpoint of sending goods and building materials and things of that nature from Maine to those locations. In terms of the military aspects of that, that's a tricky question to answer. I think, again, there's an opportunity for the United States to lead a bit more here with the Arctic Council chairmanship, but it hasn't yet been determined. The military wouldn't come into this, I think, you know, unless all of a sudden we start looking at some ice-breaking capacity, you know, and that would be the Coast Guard, not necessarily the Army or anyone else. But the ice-breaking capacity is the immediate thing that we need to focus on.
Okay. And Dana, Patrick mentioned the Arctic Council, the the intergovernmental agency, the international intergovernmental agency that the U.S. assumes chairmanship of this month. I know that your organization, the Maine North Atlantic Development Office, will be involved in the Arctic Council. What are your priorities, and what should the U.S. priorities be going forward, do you believe?
Well, the U.S. chairmanship that's coming up, and the U.S. will assume the chairmanship of the Arctic Council on April 24th. The U.S. has come up with a brand for their chairmanship. It's a two-year chairmanship, and that brand is One Arctic, Sharing Opportunities, Challenges, and Responsibilities. And you know, within that brand, it's showing that all of us, not just Arctic states and peoples, really share in the responsibility for managing the region. And so, you know, I've been to a number of Arctic-related conferences over the past year, and what I hear as a recurring theme is, you know, what happens in the Arctic doesn't necessarily stay in the Arctic. And so here in Maine, I think we're probably already seeing some sea level rise. And actually, Patty, I remember reading a report recently. I think it was a report put together by Bigelow Laboratory and GMRI, indicating that the Gulf of Maine is warming 99% faster than the rest of the world's oceans. And so the question is this related to the Arctic sea ice melting? So it's happening here, and I think we have a responsibility to step up and contribute to mitigating and or sort of assimilating to what's happening. So, you know, beyond the brand of the U.S. Arctic Council chairmanship, the U.S. has identified three thematic areas that they would like to focus on during the U.S. chairmanship, and those are Arctic ocean safety, security, and stewardship, improving economic and living conditions for the people of the Arctic. It's not empty. There are about 4 million people living there. And addressing the impacts of climate change. And I would argue that Maine has expertise to contribute to every thematic area proposed under the U.S. chairmanship.
Okay, Patty, you wanted to jump in as well?
Yeah, because she gave me the perfect entry, because how do you understand the changes unless you have long-term observations? And one of the things that people forget when you think about the Arctic, as Senator King said, is a Mediterranean Sea. It's not like the Antarctic, where there's a chunk of land in the middle. So most of the long-term observatories are around on the periphery of the Arctic Ocean. They're highly applicable to the terrestrial part of the Arctic. The Arctic has a land part and a water part. How do you deploy instrumentation on sea ice? And so there's been a lot of work on that, funded by the National Science Foundation. It's called the Arctic Observing Network. And there's an international component to that as well.
And you feel as though, even though we know a lot, we don't know more than we do know. And that this is happening very quickly, and science is struggling to keep up.
Absolutely, because we have so little data about what's happening in the middle of the Arctic. And there is a large program, for example, now we're talking about, you know, changes in the Gulf of Maine. Are those waters that are coming from the Arctic through the Labrador Sea making it into the Gulf of Maine? And there's a large observatory, international, Canadians, U.S., Germans, Norwegians, instrumenting all of that region at the tip of the southern tip of Greenland, effectively.
Oh, so interesting. Going to Philip in Portland. Hi, Philip. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thank you. This last part of the conversation leads directly to what I have to say. Where everything is warming, part of that is the change in the AMOC, the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation. That's the mechanism that drives the Gulf Stream. Now, the AMOC appears to be slowing down now. It's a little early to tell. But I'd like to comment on that. I mean, if the Gulf Stream shuts down, it's a different ballgame. So I'll give you some time for that. Thank you very much.
Patty?
Yeah, that's perfect. This large observatory at the southern tip of Greenland, in Davis Strait, which is the strait between Greenland and Canada and Baffin Bay, is exactly to look at whether AMOC, the Atlantic Meridional Ocean Circulation, is slowing down or not. So if you think that the Gulf Stream that is coming around Florida and up is like a river that then turns right towards England, which is why England has palm trees at the same latitude that we're freezing, if the fresh water that comes south lays on top of these denser, saltier water, then some of that circulation gets stopped. I could spend the entire hour talking about this. Obviously, I'm not going to do that. And that's a major question. What will that happen? If that moves further south because more of this Arctic fresher water is coming south, will England get colder? Will the northeast in the U.S. get colder? We don't know. We're desperately trying to monitor those flows.
Okay, Patrick, I wanted to get to a question for you before we run out of time here. We've talked a lot about this 10 years, and 10 years we'll see a lot more ship traffic. But you believe that right now the changes in the Arctic are affecting us, not as Patty has talked about necessarily. I mean, you believe, I'm not saying this well, not only are we seeing the changes now in science and in the ecology, but also in trade.
Yes, absolutely. And before I jump into that, I'd just like to say, these questions and calls that we're receiving are a perfect example of why Maine is just in a perfect position to lead on this discussion in the Arctic. I mean, I love Maine. We have people calling in who are well-educated and understanding of all the implications going on. We just need to harness that and get more involved as a state in this discussion. On the trade front, we are already trading through AIMSCIP with some of these very remote Arctic locations. And it's not in the energy sector. It's not petroleum or things of that nature. It's trade of seafood going in both directions. It's trade in, we have chocolate being made here that's being exported to these remote locations. Household goods and materials, building materials. A lot of these communities in the Arctic, they struggle a great deal with receiving goods. You know, a lot of times the only goods they get are by ships that come very rarely given the ice blockage, or by air freight, which is extremely expensive. And so there are immediate opportunities where Maine is now connected to some of these remote locations. And we have a lot of Maine-based entrepreneurs who are already shipping with AIMSCIP out to some of these areas. And it's a huge growth opportunity for the state. With a state of only 1 million people, we don't need to be the leading exporter to China to be growing our trade opportunities. We can work with niche opportunities throughout these Arctic nations and Arctic communities and really grow a great deal trading with them.
Going to try to get to one more call in the little bit of time we have left. Paul in Cumberland, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hello. Yes, I just wanted to comment on the, real huge potential and catastrophic consequences of natural gas and oil exploration in the Arctic. It's pretty, I guess, horrifying to hear and see what I call an insult to injury. Here the Arctic is melting, many species are in jeopardy, and we are going to continue the exploitation and continue this vicious cycle of climate change caused by burning fossil fuels. And just wanted to hear some comments. I guess it's very difficult to hear this and see this, and again, that idea of insult to injury.
Oh, sure, Paul, you're not the only one. In doing research for this show, I found a quote from Senator Franklin, a Democrat from Minnesota, Al Franken. So we have a bit of an ironic situation here, do we not, where the burning of fossil fuels is creating an opportunity to find more fossil fuels
so
to burn them.
On that front, if I may, I was testifying at that legislative hearing that Senator Franken made that comment, and it was ironic and humorous in a bad way. The reality is it's real. The climate change discussion, it's not a debate, it's not a discussion. But the thing that we all have to understand is we have got to take a leadership role in figuring out how to mitigate this very bad situation in the Arctic. And that's why Maine is a great position to do that. One of the things I want to point out is the Scandinavian countries that we're working a great deal with, Iceland and Norway, even though they're close to these oil and gas resources, they're also carbon neutral. In the case of Iceland, it's mostly geothermal and wind and hydropower. We've got a lot to learn there, and that's an aspect of mitigating the human contribution to climate change while adapting to the immediate effects of it.
Okay, Patty, and very quickly, please.
Yeah. It's an opportunity to do research and educate. There are a number of institutions here in Maine, Bigelow, with a lot of microbial research, the trifecta of Bowden, Bates, and Colby, the University of Maine Climate Center. I'm sure I'm forgetting some. But I just spoke this morning with the wonderful Colby student that I had in my laboratory, who is right now doing a master's at the University of Tromsø in Norway in hopes to come back.
Well, thank you all for being here today. I had a feeling we were going to feel like we were running out of time. Patty Matry is Senior Research Scientist at Bigelow Laboratory for Ocean Sciences. Dana Eidsness is the Director of the Maine North Atlantic Development Office. Patrick Arnold is Director of Operations and Business Development for the Maine Port Authority. John Keimel ran the board today. The Executive Producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Don't forget that the Maine Calling Book Club reconvenes on April 30th to discuss Lily King's highly acclaimed novel, Euphoria. Head over to your local bookstore or library and pick up a copy. You will not be disappointed. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.